Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, joined, of course, by my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's going on, Drance?
Not much. I actually took a bit of a spill on a trail walk this bright and early before heat had really kicked in, and some loose debris on the trail fell me. I had a really tough ankle sprain right now. It included an hour walk through the desert to get back to my car, which was a lot of fun. So, you know, it's been an interesting morning for your boy.
Drance, you know what? Look, I just got to say, everyone's dealing with bumps and bruises this time of year, man, all right? Like, who do you think you are? Elias Pettersson? Using this as an excuse already, preemptively? No, I'm just kidding. It's tough.
No, I guess you missed the memo on Adam Fox, yes, and Jacob Trouba, huh, Jamie?
Well, and like, like dozens of NHL players every year who say that they have an injury after the playoffs end, like a completely normal rote thing that happens every season. Anyways, big show today, as always.
You know what? We haven't really gotten into the Pettersson injury one, and I just want to note really quickly, the reason I buy it is that months before it was a quote-unquote excuse, I think it was something that anyone who has watched Pettersson play like 350 of his 400 NHL games, as you and I have, and I think most of our listeners have, like, kind of knew, you know. And I'm not saying that it was all the injury. I'm sure there was more going on, but the similarity with what it looked like when he was working back from his ankle injury, right? For me, I find it tough to square the idea that it was a quote unquote excuse with what we saw, just because what we saw made the argument more compellingly than Pettersson could have, even if he'd said nothing at his, like, if he'd said nothing at his end of year availability, mm-hmm, I'd still be talking about the fact that, you know, he didn't want to disclose it, but sure, he had an injury.
Yeah, of course.
You know? So anyway, it just, that's the reason that for me anyway, I've always just like found it compelling and don't understand some of the blowback that this player's been getting for doing something that's completely routine and has been for 50 years in the history of hockey.
Yeah, well, we've spent months being like, he's probably hurt. He's probably dealing with something, right? Because it was evident in his play to a certain extent, and we didn't know what. And, you know, there's this argument like, oh, well, everyone else was so much more injured than him. And that could very well be true, but I don't see why that makes it then offensive for him to say, yeah, I had this knee injury and it was affecting my play. Anyways, we're going back to like 2 weeks ago now, diving into the Pettersson thing, but it has been a strange story. We have some new news for the Canucks today. Just a little while ago, coaching staff update from the Vancouver Canucks. Jogi Spakovsky, promoted to assistant coach, was previously serving as the skills coach for the team. So, of course, we had talked, especially after Mike Yeo departed the bench, about an opening at the assistant coach position. That's filled by Jogi Spakovsky. I'm going to keep trying to work through that name.
Shevkovsky.
Okay.
It's actually really easy once you realize to ignore sort of how it's spelt, and you've just like heard it a couple times. It's actually not a difficult one.
For some reason, I had Spakovsky in my head, but Shevkovsky.
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 Maybe say it quickly enough so that you're splitting the difference.
Just kind of mumble through it. Anyway, so they fill it internally, promoting him from skills coach, and they also say that Henrik and Daniel Sedin will be more involved in the day-to-day coaching activities in both Vancouver and Abbotsford. And I do love how vague the Sedins are able to keep their gig with the Canucks. They're just kind of there. They're doing different things. I think we've lost Drancer here momentarily. We're going to try to get his connection back figured out here when we can. But as I said, that's the news from Canucks general manager Patrick Alvin earlier today. Jogi Shevkovsky promoted to assistant coach, previously the skills coach, and Henrik and Daniel Sedin, quote, will be more involved in the day-to-day coaching activities in both Vancouver and Abbotsford. So,
you got me?
Yeah. We got Drance back here? Yeah? I'm getting a thumbs up. I'm getting a very hesitant thumbs up from Dom. but I can hear you, so apparently we have you back.
Okay, cool. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I literally just assumed that it would be to Dom only. So the coaching changes.
Yep.
Rick Tocchet's going to be made available to the media at 3:30 this afternoon, mm-hmm. so we'll have more information then. And what I'd say about Yogi Shifkovsky is, you know, this is one of those rare people in the business who you never hear a bad word about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, players like working with him. There's a lot of respect for his intellect, his hockey mind. Obviously, he's been a skills coach primarily at both the pro and major junior levels. You know, there was a time during like the Don Hay regime with the Vancouver Giants, and around to people who closely observe Giants history in hockey. And there was a time during the Don Hay sort of regime where Yogi would be up in the press box, eye in the sky, in his role as skills coach, something he did for the Canucks throughout his two seasons to this point for Vancouver. And then in the third period would occasionally join the team on the bench, right? And I think what that tells you is this is a guy whose ability to see and process the game. His understanding goes beyond just skills, what you should try, you know, toe drag moves.
Right.
Right. A lot of NHL players will tell you, you get a skills coach and they're talking about toe drag moves and they tune them out pretty quickly. Or like, you know, some of the hard skills in terms of like, actually, it's like none of that works in the NHL, man. you know, Yogi, I think it obviously goes a level beyond that. And so I want to start by just saying there's a lot of people who have, you know, been around him, worked with him, who like rave, right, about his abilities, about his intelligence. And I know that the organization, you know, came to rely on him at an increasing clip over the course of the season, specifically his work with Dakota Joshua when Joshua was injured, right, to keep Joshua like fit. And then Joshua's immediately, not just fit, but like game ready. And then Joshua's immediately impactful on his return. Like that turned a lot of heads. And that's not the only story by any means. So congratulations to him. But I do think there's an inexperience angle, which I'm sure we'll unpack after the crossover.
And we will get into the crossover now. We are now joined by Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check. The crossover is brought to you by Besant Motors, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles, and Where the Players Go. Rick, Donnie, how's it going today, fellas?
Lovely.
Good, guys. Very good.
All right, so we have some actual legitimate Canucks news to talk about today, which is fantastic, given this massive layoff before the Stanley Cup Finals. So the additions to the coaching staff, or the changes to the coaching staff, they promote Yogi Shifkovsky to assistant coach. He was previously the skills coach. And on top of that, Henrik and Daniel Sedin will be, quote, more involved in the day-to-day coaching activities in both Vancouver and Abbotsford. Rick, we can start with you. What can you tell us about the thought process going into these moves from the Canucks today?
Well, it's hard to first of all, it just happened. And second of all, I think all of us, and Thomas alluded to this, I think we all expected Tocchet to probably interview. There's a ton of assistant coaches in the NHL that are looking for jobs. There's a lot of guys that have been fired in the past year that are looking for jobs. Just take a look at who Travis Green hired in yep. Ottawa. So there's a ton of people out there looking for jobs, and the Canucks went in-house. Did it surprise a lot of people? Yes. Yogi Shifkovsky, I'll tell you, and Thomas, you touched on it too. And Donnie and I both know because of minor hockey and his reputation in the Lower Mainland is absolutely phenomenal. He runs the BC Bears program in the spring. You know, so many pro players and, you know, kids getting ready for the Western Hockey League, kids coming out of the Western Hockey League draft, kids getting ready for the Western Hockey League draft, all go to Yogi. He's one of the top go-to guys in the Lower Mainland for skills, for guys that want to fine-tune their game, get better in the summer. Hey, call up Yogi. Let's get her done. We know his reputation in the Lower Mainland. But I also want to say, And Thomas, you touched on Dakota Joshua. Well, if you look at Dakota Joshua's last 10, 15 goals, a lot of them are very nice goals, a lot of nice touch around the net. Well, one of the reasons is the skills coach, and that's what he does. He improves players' touch around the net with repetition and all that stuff. I thought, I've also heard over the course of the last 2 years that they are very happy with Yogi as the skills coach in Vancouver and in Abbotsford. Yes, he's got no coaching experience at the NHL level or the American League level, but guess what? He's going to get it now. And I fully expect him to run the power play. He'll be the guy there. Look, it's. They thought we're going to go internally. They did it, and now it's time will tell how this thing goes.
Pretty much every game, after every practice, you listen to Rick talk at talk. We all do listen to the entire interviews. How many times, Thomas, have we heard? I don't know if he could pronounce his last name well. But we heard Rick Tocchet refer to Yogi. He has done that a lot over the last season and a half. Always, I think he has surprised him. You mentioned the lack of NHL experience for Yogi, but I get the feeling, just the sense, that Yogi has surprised Tocchet by how effective he's been. A couple of other things, they make this move. And it's promotion from within. I wonder if Yogi got offers from other organizations. So there's that. The other thing, Rick, too, you mentioned that how well-respected he is in minor hockey circles around here. You mentioned the Bears, but also South Delta Minor Hockey, the Delta Academy. South Delta Minor Hockey has won the U18 A1 Provincial Championship the last 3 years.
Yes,
and a lot of those kids are the product of Yogi and the clinics that he runs during the season and in the summer.
100%.
And I mentioned the Delta Academy as well. He's really well. And I know minor hockey is a different ball of wax, but you can just tell that he's very well respected at the NHL level as well. He's been around for a while.
Yeah, and so congratulations. I mean, you also never hear about that.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead, Drew.
Sorry about that.
So go, Thomas, go.
No, congratulations to him. And obviously, you'll never hear a bad word said about his character either, which I do weight heavily. And yet, aside from some integration onto Don Hayes' coaching staff during his time with the Giants, I mean, Rick, you said he hasn't had assistant coaching experience at the NHL level. Like, I don't know that you'd say he has at the major junior level necessarily either, although it looks like he did have the title assistant coach for a bit. In terms of being on the bench and being a full-time assistant, it's a pretty big step up for a guy who's never done it. And given that the club has also, brought in Manny Malhotra to be the head coach of their American League team, I mean, you've got some prominent roles in the Canucks coaching staff that were held down by guys who had a lot of experience, right? Colleton had been an NHL head coach. Mm-hmm. Mike Yeo had been an NHL head coach in two different stops, an assistant for 30 years. And now they're, turning to some really sharp quality people, but quality people who've never really done the jobs yet. Do you think that's anything, Rick? Is there concern? Is there buzz about how the club has decided to approach filling some pretty prominent roles on Tocchet's staff?
I don't think there's concern, but I think there's a lot of surprise. We didn't see Jamie Colleton going. Let's be honest, guys. Mike Yeo, we didn't see him leaving. And all of a sudden, all this coaching shuffling is the last thing anybody expected after a great year. And yet they got a new coach in Abbotsford. They got a new coach in Vancouver. And as you said, not a lot of experience. But I think people are more surprised, Thomas, that we're going through this shuffling of coaches. And one of the areas I thought the Canucks were most stable with in the last 2 years was coaching. And now we've kind of had some, turnover, which I don't think anyone expected. I don't think we expected this turnover at the coaching level.
And I just want to get your take on this, Thomas. Also, with Yogi reportedly being in charge of the power play versus Tocchet, which was the case last year. But Yogi's a skills guy, and I'm just wondering about, when it comes to the X's and O's of a power play, if the Sedins are getting an increased role, wouldn't they be a more logical choice to run the power play? Nothing against Yogi, but it just seems his area of expertise lies elsewhere in the past.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think also dovetails with something that we did see last year. I mean, the Canucks made some unconventional choices in filling out their staff in Rick Tocchet's first full season, right? I mean, a head coach running an NHL power play directly is not common. Sergei Gonchar coming and going as a part-time assistant coach, but then being on the bench when he's around, that's not common. And, you know, if the season had gone a different way, maybe those would have been things we talked about. But we didn't really talk about it until the power play let down in the postseason, because until then, the Canucks power play, yes, it looked stilted in the second half, but it worked. They were, you know, top half of the league, top 10 for much of the season, and the power play went nuke for a couple months at the start of the year, which earned the club, I think, a lot of grace to struggle as the year went on. So, you know, I do think Tocchet's staff, the way that this club has managed Tocchet's staff, has already been subject to some interesting decisions, some eyebrow furrowing bets from the club. And, you know, I guess this is an extension of it. It's just that when you think about just the level of experience and presumably compensation that would have been represented by the likes of Colleton and Yeo, and sort of consider what they've brought in to replace it, it's certainly something that makes me go,
Well, and the Sedin side of this is interesting as well, right? Because, you know, just looking at the Canucks website, and they have the changes here. They have Yogi as an assistant coach. You know, the Sedins are still listed under player development, but we know already, I think they were much more involved on a day-to-day basis than, you know, people in other organizations who have the player development title. Now it's saying they're going to be even more involved, right, with both Abbotsford and Vancouver. And look, I just find the Sedins kind of career arc fascinating. You go back to when they joined the club under Jim Benning, and it was kind of in a front office role, seeing how they liked things there. Now it's on an on-ice role. And, you know, Rick, as I know you said, it just happened, so maybe you haven't had a chance to really work the phones on this, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what a bigger role on a day-to-day basis translates to for the Sedins in the next season.
Well, they got, they're still young. They can still climb the ladder any year after this year, or 2, 3, 4 years down the road. They're here. They love it in Vancouver. This is where they're going to live. But you know what? When they were first hired, Jamie, a lot of people said, you know, this is just a gimmick move, or, you know, this is just, you know. But you know what? That's not true. These guys have done a wonderful job. And if you're any organization in the league and you can say to your farm team that we got Daniel and Henrik that are going to work with your top prospects, like, how many teams can say that? I mean, that's pretty good to have these two guys working with the young kids, teaching them. Who was it the other day? We had Josh Bloom on today, and he talked about, his time in Abbotsford, and he brought up the Sedin twins and how cool it was for these guys to give him tips and stuff like that. So the Sedin twins have all the opportunity in years to come to climb the ladder and do whatever they want. But I like the role they're in right now, Jamie. There's no rush in moving up. They don't have to be head coach or GM or assistant coaches. They like what they're doing, and they're doing a damn good job of it.
Yeah, and Thomas, you mentioned that some of the things they're doing are unusual. I like the idea of with Gonchar. Let's start there. With Gonchar coming in every once in a while, part time, going on the bench. It's different. You know, you got veteran players there that might appreciate a different approach. And the Sedins every once in a while, guys. It's an 82 game schedule, preseason, training camp, playoffs. Players get tired of the same voices over and over. Rick Tocchet will tell you that over and over again. You bring in a guy every once in a while, I think, are they the right guys? You could argue that. But I think that if that's indeed what their thinking is, I like it. Just bringing in a different voice, and I think people will respond to that voice more if they don't hear it every single day.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to you, Rick, about your Ian Cole report, a scooplet from you today. What are you hearing on Ian Cole, and what does it mean for the composition of the Canucks defense?
Well, it looks like, as of now, it looks like Ian Cole is going to hit the free agent market. If you guys remember, last summer signed that one-year deal at $3 million. The two sides have been talking. There's been contract talks, but I think the Canucks would need Cole at a much lower number than three. And doesn't look like the Canucks will be able to re-sign him after some contract talks took place last week. Two sides cannot find common ground. It just looks like, look, he's getting up there in age, right, guys? And they brought him in for leadership. Alvin Rutherford, you know, and Tocchet, they knew him from the Pittsburgh days. You know, he's got over 1,000 games in the NHL. He was the one player on the Canucks with the most playoff games experience. He was great in the dressing room, great pro on and off the ice. All that stuff was great. But here's where the Canucks are. They've got a ton of UFAs. They've got a ton of RFAs who all need, everyone's got their hand out for a raise. The only guy that doesn't got his hand out for a raise is Myers, because he's going to go from 6 to 3. Everybody else, all the agents are saying, hey, we played a big role in helping the Vancouver Canucks have their best year in 13 years. And no one else has taken a pay cut. But I will say this, the Canucks absolutely love Ian Cole and what he brings. Cole wanted to come back. I just don't think the numbers can work. And as of now, it looks like he's probably going to hit that July 1st free agent market.
And I think, you know, on Ian Cole, he struggled in the playoffs. I think it's fair. And he became the target of a lot of ire from Canucks fans. I know you had the report as well, but he was dealing with an ankle injury, Rick, on your show today. But let's not forget, for much of the season, I mean, he was a really important part of this blue line. You mentioned the experience, but his value on the penalty kill, the minutes he was able to play. We've all been focused on, you know, Zadorov and Myers and Filip Hronek, but it's not necessarily going to be easy to replace all the things that Ian Cole brought to the team this year either.
Yeah, and the other thing with Ian Cole is that he was the lefty who was, and the playoffs aside, the ankle injury and all of that, and the odd hiccup here, but he was comfortable playing on the right side, which they needed. And it just seemed, I don't know what you guys think, but it just seemed that as the season wore on, especially in the playoffs, maybe a little confidence was lost in Noah Juulsen. Although Rick Tocchet talked him up a lot during the regular season, but it was pretty valuable to have a lefty that could play fairly effectively on the right side in Ian Cole. So I think, you know, despite what a lot of people might think, given what happened in the playoffs, he's going to be pretty hard to replace. And then plus the players would talk a lot about how when things were down, it was Ian Cole who would settle things down in the dressing room and come up with a veteran speech that really that was really effective and worked the next time out.
Well, and it's no surprise. I mean, you guys have heard him interview. We've talked to him on the station a lot. Like he's an incredible talker, so insightful and just upfront, candid. Like just a pleasure to talk to and learn about hockey from.
Why is it, Jamie and Thomas, that the Canucks do not put more value, place more value
on us,
on players who are good to the media, like on us? Absolutely. I never, like, I don't know if you saw this Josh Bloom kid today on our show. Like, sign him right now.
Sign him up.
He would be top three interview, and I think that should be like. That should be a top three priority for the Canucks when you're signing somebody.
So Hronek out, Cole in, is what you're saying, Dottie.
Sure. Well, hold on a second now.
You like the Hronek
before. Yeah. I like the Hronek interview. I'm okay. That got numbers for us. And I know you guys feel the same way. Well, you know what, though? It's different for radio because that was one you had to see.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if looks could kill, Jeff wouldn't be around anymore.
Yeah. Hey, Rick, the other thing go ahead, Rick.
I wanted to say about Cole, I know he took a lot of heat, especially in the Edmonton series, but I do want you guys to know he got his skates tangled up with Evander Kane in game two, and he got 8 stitches on his ankle. I don't know if you guys have ever put your foot in a boot and skate with 8 stitches. It's not a lot of fun. It's freaking painful. The stuff that guy had to do to get every game. And I know, look, if I don't come out and say that he had an ankle injury, you know, the easy thing always, especially on Twitter, is to rip and tear without knowledge of what's going on.
And yet you do it all the time.
Stop it. But the thing that Twitter does is that we don't want to know what's behind the scenes and what's causing this guy's play to go south. But he had a pretty significant injury, and he didn't. And I'll give Ian Cole credit. He was asked in his availability, just like Hronek and just everybody else, did you play hurt? And he said no. So you know what? Every player on that day had a choice. They knew they were going to be asked about injuries. Some guys said we were injured, and some guys said we were not injured.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about Cole, too, is he literally was in the medical room in gear on occasion after morning skates in that Oilers series, which, you know, I wasn't
there,
sure what was going on
you
there.
Go.
But now that we know the context, now that we understand that he was dealing with a pretty severe cut, I mean, it took real guts to suit up every night in that series. And I don't think people should forget either the calm defensive game he brought all season, really, with his best games coming against Nashville in the playoffs before that injury kind of caused him to maybe struggle a bit, in my opinion, in that Oilers series.
Yeah. Okay, and people don't know this either, but there was an incident, I think it was after game two. He was going on a walk, and he hurt his ankle. He twisted his ankle. What is this we're hearing, Thomas?
You were on
a walk today down in L.A., and by the way, how long have you been down there? Like 7 years?
Yeah.
Like,
no, I was sure. On a...
And you quit...
Can you do us a favor and move to L.A. full time?
I was on a mountainous climb, Donnie, and it was a trail that's not like that well packed. And it just gave way. I got too close to the edge, wasn't paying attention, was maybe a little dehydrated. Had a fall. It was not one of those funny falls. You know what I mean? Like, you know when you fall
and
your friends aren't laughing?
Not funny to you.
Oh, yeah. I've been there.
No. I was with the sorts of friends that I fell, and I could tell that they didn't think it was funny. And that's how you know. That's how you're like, oh, my God, am I
hurt?
That's
bad.
I wasn't.
Bad. And yet, here you are right now. Look at this.
He's fighting for it.
Are you in a walking boot? Are you in a walking boot?
No, I'm not athletic enough for a walking boot.
Well, then suck it up.
I am.
Well, he is.
But I am going to put my feet up and ice half hour on, half hour off, probably for the rest of the day.
Okay, hold on. I have a real question I want to ask Rick before we wrap this up here. I know Elliot Friedman was on with you guys earlier in the week mentioning the Canucks working hard to try to clear salary. And the way I interpret it was that maybe, you know, trying to clear multiple salaries off their books. I think we all think we go right to Ilya Mikheyev, of course. You know, I'm sure they would love to find a way to move that contract. But, Rick, do you have any sense? Are there players that they have under contract beyond Ilya Mikheyev that they might be looking to move to create some salary cap space?
Did hear that they're trying to move guys to clear up cap space so they can sign the Zadorovs and the Joshuas of the world. Mikheyev's obviously your easiest number one target, right? Mm-hmm. And they are trying to do that. They got his name out there. I don't know really, Jamie, any others that I can think of that are point blank. I mean, Hronek's name you're hearing a lot, you know. That's possibly good money you could clear up if you can move that. It's, especially if you're not comfortable with his ask, which is $8 million a year, that would clear up some space. But the one name you do hear is Mikheyev, and you know what? But have fun trading a guy who has one goal in 51 games and is coming off a major knee surgery. Have fun doing that, and you don't have a first or a second round pick in this year's draft to throw in for a sweetener. So exactly how would you do that?
It's going to be tough.
Doesn't
it's
sound
tough.
Fun, Rick.
Well, maybe somebody's intrigued by the one goal. One goal. At least he didn't go for a walk. But one goal in 59 or 60 games, whatever it is. But that knee injury, maybe somebody would still see something there, knowing that it takes a long time
but Donnie,
to get completely healthy.
To take that contract, it's going to cost a sweetener. They don't have anything to put in a sweetener right now. Nothing.
All right, we'll wrap it up there, guys. Thank you for doing this, as always. We'll chat next week.
Be careful out there, Thomas.
Thomas, put some A5-3-5 rub on there. You'll be okay.
Yeah, on a cut. Good idea.
No, he said the muscle. Put it on the muscle part, Thomas. Call me later, Thomas. Call me. Call me later, Thomas. I'll give you some advice.
All right, that is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dhali on Check TV. The crossover brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles, and where the players go.
When Rick says call me later, it's usually because he wants to work an angle with about something, right? Yeah. Like he wants to work an angle with me in terms of getting to the bottom of a story. This time
he wants to give you medical advice.
I fear the story might be Rick Dhaliwal's takes on topical ointments, which is not something I require.
At full volume. At absolute full volume. Yelling at the top of his lungs.
I'm telling you, Thomas. I'm telling you.
And you're like, I'm not disagreeing with you.
I'm just telling you nicely.
Why are you yelling at me? I said yes. There's no argument here.
Oh, I love it.
All right. We'll take a break. Of course, Jason Buchla is coming up at 1, but we've got an open segment next. So get your texts in and more Canucks talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. As we continue to look ahead to the Canucks off season and what the Canucks might do in the summer. And we were discussing, or Rick was discussing a little bit, Ilya Mikheyev. The Canucks would love to move that salary, but in Rick's words, have fun doing so. James from Richmond texts in, concerning Mikheyev, it can't get any worse. Only upwards from here for him. There might be some truth to that, right? I know you've talked about, you know, given the severity of his injury and the long layoff or the long recovery period that exists for a torn ACL and on a hockey player vet, there is at least some reason to buy that Ilya Mikheyev will be more effective. Now, that doesn't mean all of a sudden he'll be a value contract or anything like that, but that you're going to get a more effective version of Ilya Mikheyev next year than you saw this season and certainly in the latter half of this season for the Canucks.
I mean, the problem with the Ilya Mikheyev situation just in general, right, is you'd love the flexibility, but you also should feel pretty confident that he's going to bounce back. Maybe not to the level, you know, for all that the most recent commentary from Canucks management about Mikheyev is, you know, that's our fault for putting him in the spot of being a top six winger. Like when he was signed, the bet explicitly was there would be more offense.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was explicitly the bet made in signing him to a 4-year deal for $4.75 million when the club's biggest needs were on defense. It was like, this is a long-term fit. We need to get faster. We need to get bigger. We need some defensive solidity, but we also think that this guy can complement skilled players in a way he was never going to get an opportunity to do in Toronto. And I always faded that take just because they tried it. Like, right? Like that organization loves nothing more than to put a grinder or a 1-year veteran, you know, like a 1-year veteran rebuild their value guy, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's Galchenyuk or, I mean, this year he played with two, Bertuzzi and Domi. We've seen Bunting. We've seen Bobby McMahon. We've seen Zach Hyman was honestly fit that mold before he was the Zach Hyman we know and, you know, loathe today. The fact remains that, you know, I always thought that was an iffy bet. I always thought that was an iffy bet in terms of Mikheyev's offense, just because there's limitations that are visible when you watch, both in terms of finishing skill, but also in terms of vision, right? I mean, there's a lot that he leaves on the table as a playmaker too. That said, I don't think Mikheyev has played a single game for the Canucks where he was the player that he was signed to be mm-hmm. in terms of the side of the bet that I like, which is a guy who I know when he's at full tilt, when he's at full pace, when he's flying about the ice with the burst that we saw in Penticton at training camp, right? Because, I mean, that was like the only time we ever saw Mikheyev fly the way Mikheyev flies when he's fully healthy. He ends up tearing his ACL later that week, plays through it for probably an inadvisable length of time, ultimately shut down surgery. And this was year one post-op. And guess what? Year one post-op for everybody. Like, for everybody is, you know, a little bit touch and go. We see some NHL players maintain their effectiveness, but guess which NHL players do it? It's Evgeny Malkin. It's Brock Nelson, right? It's guys who aren't relying on their speed the way Mikheyev to drive play and be effective at the NHL level. And so, you know, parting with assets to get off of Mikheyev's 4.75, I understand it to a point, just in that we've seen what this organization, what this management group can do with, you know, $5 million in cap space. Mm. And I think we're fans of that work. But on the other hand, I do think, you know, like we were talking about who could replace Joshua internally last year. Well, Mikheyev's a 6'3" guy who could probably do a lot more for you next season. Like, that replacement might be in-house and it might not be a young guy. You know, if you go into next season having changed very little, you know, in terms of what you've spent on your bottom six or your balance, and your, you know, day one training camp third line is something like Mikheyev, Suter and Hoglander, or Mikheyev, Suter and Garland. I mean, is it perfect? No. Is it going to be your calling card reason for winning the Stanley Cup? No. Is it going to be good enough that they can hold the fort and let your stars win it if your stars are able to recreate the sort of 82 game impact that Besser and Miller and Pettersson before the injury and Hughes and Demko before the injury made? No, it's not going to hold you back at all. It's totally fine. It's like better than the Oilers' third line today, and they're in the Cup final. So, you know, I just think I like the Mikheyev bet to bounce back. And for me, that would be a big reason why, you know, if the Canucks asked my opinion, and they never would, I would say, hey, you know, I wouldn't be parting with assets to get off this 4.75 unless the player you're bringing in, like unless what you're able to use that space for is, you know, completely overwhelming.
Yeah. And I think, and Dollywell made this point as well, it would be one thing if they had like a surplus of second round picks, you know what I mean? That they could use and like, okay, look, we can part with one and it doesn't hurt that much to do this. But of course they don't. They don't have a second round pick this year, right? They've been at that draft pick deficit pretty consistently over the last several seasons. I think that changes the calculus as well. It becomes more painful to give up even more assets, especially when, as you said, there are reasons to be at least a little bit optimistic about a potential bounce back for Ilya Mikheyev. The player who's available, right, the player in question to bring in with that salary cap space could certainly change the calculus as well. But again, it just becomes really difficult to do without those sweeteners, those easy sweeteners on hand to pay somebody to take the contract. Now, JFID texts in, and this ties in a little bit, right, just on the idea of who they can target, how much cap space they'll have. JFID texts in, so much talk about high-end targets like Gensel, Natchez, etc. It makes sense, but the reality of it is difficult to fathom. Do you see the Canucks GM going quantity over quality and giving the players time during the season to find chemistry? For example, instead of investing in Gensel, sign DeBrusque and DeClaire instead, two potential top sixers instead of one guaranteed, or is the skilled gap too obvious and the Canucks need a bona fide top-line score? Well, they need a bona fide top-line score. Where I think JFID's scenario comes into play is in the very likely reality that Jake Gensel doesn't sign with you, right? And that's nothing against the Canucks. It's just only one team can sign Jake Gensel. Jake Gensel can only be the solution for a top-line scorer for one team this year, right? And it's just the nature of free agency is you can't bank on, oh, we're going to get that guy no matter what in the summer. If you don't get Jake Gensel and the trade market, you know, you don't want to part with a Lekkerimäki or Verlander, then I think you might have to start turning towards more of a quantity over the one big swing target approach that that JFID's talking about there.
Yeah, I mean, I like volume plays on upside players. I think where we sometimes get a little bit excited at this time of year, I've noticed a lot of content about this where people are talking about buy lows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are like, could this guy be a buy low option like Danton Heinen?
Mm-hmm.
Could Danton Heinen be a buy low option for the Canucks? It's like, not really, because that was last
that
year
was last
his buy low.
Yeah.
The year prior was his buy low, right? It's like Manny Malhotra at 2009-10 Canucks captain skates was an unsigned free agent who spent, you know, months around the team. It was like Manny Malhotra and Kyle Turris were like the local guys still skating with the Canucks right up into the eve of training camp, because Turris was in a contract dispute with the Arizona Coyotes prior to his trade to, I guess it was Ottawa. And Malhotra was unsigned and finally earned a PTO with the Sharks and finally earned a one-year deal and then had a great season. And by the time you pay him $2.5 million times three, as the Canucks did, a deal which, by the way, would have been excellent if Malhotra hadn't had the devastating eye injury. By the time, like, you're no longer in buy-low territory. He's established himself, right? So I feel like there's a lot of players we say this stuff about. It's like, declare without the playoff glow-up for the Tampa Bay Lightning, because he was so good for them down the stretch. Like, so good. You know, might have been a buy-low option. And by the way, another guy who's coming off of ACL surgery, right? Like another guy with a ligament. I don't know if it was ACL actually, but a ligament, a surgery to repair a torn ligament. And then his value fades. And then you're like 18 months out, it starts to look like the player we're used to again, right? DeBrusk is, I mean, he's not going to make Gensel money, but he's not going to be cheap. There's not going to be. Suitors are not going to be shy about targeting physical complimentary top six winger. You know, I mean, that guy's going to have a robust market. So I like the volume play. It's just, even if Gensel makes eight, like, I don't know that you actually fit DeBrusk and Duclair under that bar. Like, I think you're going to have to aim perhaps a little bit lower, especially with what I expect from some inflationary pressure, especially at the top end of this free agent market, stemming from, you know, cap growth and the fact that the old Arizona Coyotes have shut down their laundromat and may actually be players in the marketplace on July 1.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a good point about DeBrusk in particular, and Anthony Duclair, to be fair, but I think the overall point of, okay, if you don't hit on a truly big fish in your top six on the wing, then probably what you want to do is cobble together the quantity some way. And maybe that's, you know, okay, Jake DeBrusk is the big ticket, and then beyond that, you do a lot of true buy-low options or whatever the case is, a bunch of kind of mid-buy options, something like that along those lines. We talked just briefly about Dom Lucic's article yesterday. Go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to follow up on this point and note that for me, like, I don't doubt that Rick Tocchet can design a way to win, a path to winning, if DeBrusk is your big ticket ad. Right. Like, I think there's a lot to like about the stylistic fit, right? What Tocchet values and the way DeBrusk plays. You know, I think there's something to maybe even the idea that, like, this club's try hard focus, which was such a key part of their identity this past year, like, maybe a good fit for a player like DeBrusk, who's battled inconsistency as kind of the drawback on his effectiveness. And I don't mean inconsistency the way people mean it when they talk about scoring forwards. I mean, like, inconsistency in terms of something a little bit more than that, in terms of two-way impact and maybe even battle level. So, you know, I like the fit, but I think it is a fundamental misdiagnosis of this issue, right? Which is, it is top of the lineup talent. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no replacement for the sort of guy who can have a Jake Gensel impact given what this team needs. Like, they're shy at least one star forward, not a good forward, a star, like a bona fide, you know, you're listing them and they're the guy you bring up as Vancouver's answer to Mikko Rantanen or, you know, Zach Hyman or Matthew Tkachuk. I mean, they're missing a star. They're missing a top player at the top of their lineup. And, you know, there's ways to get more offense from this group potentially without landing that star player. Certainly power play would be nice, although the star player who's also a lefty shot that for the bumper would help, could be part of the solution there too. But in terms of what they generate 5-on-5, it's like, there's ways that they could tweak things to create more offense, turn the dials here and there. But if they're going to play the way they played last year, right? Like, leveling up their top talent has to be the thing, you know? And just to like really emphasize this, I've been talking a lot about shot rate, 5-on-5 shot rate, in part because the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers were the two best at it throughout the season. Like, overall, over the course of the season, two of the top three teams in terms of generating five-on-five looks, quality looks five-on-five, ended up competing for the Stanley Cup final. I just want to read you the teams that finished below Vancouver by this metric last season. The Arizona Coyotes, the Detroit Red Wings, the Montreal Canadiens, the Anaheim Ducks, the Chicago Blackhawks, the San Jose Sharks, and the Washington Capitals. So, you know, it's not enough to target tweaks or like minor improvements, right? Like this team needs a quantum leap forward in their ability to sustain an attacking threat at even strength if they're going to come better next season than they did this year. I don't see any other way to sort of label or describe that problem. That's how significant what the sort of hole in the Canucks lineup is that we're talking about. And I just don't think, like, you need to fire big guns at it. And for me, DeBrusk is like quality ammunition as opposed to something, you know, with a nuclear warhead on it.
It's tough too, because yeah, I like DeBrusk, but I do also sometimes feel like the biggest mistakes that teams make in free agency is when you have this kind of glaring need at the top of your lineup, there's inherently only a few options that will fill that. If you strike out on them, there's still the temptation like, well, we got to try to solve it some way. So you go out and you spend on the guy who's a good player, but who doesn't actually address that need at the highest level, right? The kind of mid-tier free agent that ends up causing teams a lot of problems down the road. Now, that doesn't mean they shouldn't target Jake DeBrusk or they shouldn't target Danton Heinen, or, you know, we could go down the list. There's lots of free agent wingers out there that I think could make sense for the team. It's just, to your point, you have to be careful about what problem is this solving for us, right? Like, you can't sign Jake DeBrusk expecting him to be that star of the top of your lineup. You have to sign him and make sure it fits in and that you still have an avenue to going to get that star at the top of their lineup. And who knows? As the texter said, sometimes it can be hard to see how these things are going to come together, but you never know what's going to shake loose going into the summer for the Canucks in terms of those star targets that they can try to go out and get. Okay, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts coming in about the Canucks summer and the offseason. We will chat with our regular guest on Wednesday, Jason Bukala, next. You heard Donnie and Rick mention Josh Bloom, so I want to ask Jason about Josh Bloom and his performance in the Memorial Cup for Saginaw, of course a Canucks prospect, and lots more to get into with Jason here on the other side on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.